Wow.
Yeah.
Age 90.
So I'm ready for tonight because I was looking at some of the movies that Lou Gossett Jr. and Miguel Ferrer did.
Yeah, I was figuring we'd split it up, separate recording, but yeah, start with Louis Gossett Jr. because basically, you know, again, just everything, you know, Iron Eagle, Officer and a Gentleman, Roots, Stargate SG-1, and just
powerhouse.
And whenever I see him in a newer movie, like he was on the recent Watchmen show, and he's just one of those. He could have been, you know, dynamite, gotten all these bigger opportunities, but I mean, he's never really felt phoned in for me, you know.
No.
He did some cool movies for Showtime. There's this crime thriller called Zoom In where he's trying to help a black community kind of figure out what gangbanger is going around doing scentless murders.
You know,
he's in the original Raisin in the Sun.
Oh yeah. When he tells that speech. Oh God.
Totally.
That speech is just amazing. You know, and that's him holding his own against Poitier.
Yeah. But to go against Poitier, I mean, that's not an easy,
that's like Jerry Quarry going against Muhammad Ali, you know?
1,000%.
When it comes to acting, because, you know, you don't expect it from him, you know?
Totally.
He, that scene where he tells that speech and it's like, you're like, whoa, head turns. Like, who is this young guy?
Totally.
You know, going toe-to-toe with Sidney Poitier, you know?
And not just anyone can try it and do it. And
no, he knocks it out of the park in that one. And there was a movie he did later called The Landlord.
Which was
kind of like Hal Ashby's first movie.
Yes.
And you know how Hal Ashby was with the way he directed, he'd get all these offbeat scripts and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
He plays a Black Panther member with an identity crisis or something like that. And it's like, it's just a tasteless, I don't want to say tasteless. It was kind of that dark humor. Like Harold and Maude. Hal Ashby did Harold and Maude. So it's kind of like the precursor to Harold and Maude.
Right.
That's the way I'm looking at it, you know.
And yeah, I have seen that one, and that was interesting in that it was just very experimental. And Beau Bridges is in it, and
yeah,
his guest spots include multiple guest spots on the Mod Squad, Petrosali, Good Times, and everyone else has definitely seen him in episodes of Madam Secretary, The Dead Zone, and he's done also just so many just great miniseries and TV movies. And even when he's in a B thriller like The Punisher with Dolph Lundgren or The Principal, it's just like,
which I love. Oh, those, that movie I love, The Principal.
Oh yeah, so much.
That's
fun.
A great movie to watch. You know,
totally. And he's done some hard-boiled dramas and cop movies too. Like,
yeah,
I'm sure you might have seen this obscure HBO TV movie back in the day called The Guardian, where he plays this private guy who has to help out.
Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, and just such a creepy home invasion movie.
Yeah.
Martin Sheen.
Do you remember him?
Verbally, like, raped.
Yeah.
He has to stop him from getting killed.
Do you remember the show he did with Jonathan Silverman called The Inspectors?
Yes.
Where they played postal inspectors.
So underrated.
And there's if I remember correctly, there was a bomb. There's a bomb. Like, they have to find a mail bomber or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
I forgot what the plot was, but I watched it. I really got into it, and I really hoped it had been a series, you know.
I was just glad
but
that it was.
He was in a TV show that I remember called The Powers of Matthew Starr. Oh.
Yes, we talked about that.
I'm sorry.
Ago, and yeah, Matthew Starr, I mean, it was interesting how it was kind of a Greatest American Hero kind of cash in. That was like one of his first times. Yeah, where he was like a supporting
role. And he just won the Oscar for. Officer Gentleman like a year and a half before that.
Right. So we're just like, he's in it.
He was in a movie. He's always been like that one constant in a movie that I, you know, like if you watch, if it has Louis Gossett Jr. in it, like Enemy Mine.
Totally.
Which is one of the most underrated science fiction movies of all time.
Absolutely. Cause
where he goes from, you know, where the him and Dennis Quaid go from enemies to, you know, he becomes, you know, Dennis Quaid has to take care of him because he's pregnant. And
such a tough role to do, you know, when
I
got to respect him even more because this was in a period where even though we like to think we got progressive throughout the 90s and the 80s, you know, it's just so hard to play, you know, a creature in makeup and like you say, just an unusual sci-fi spectrum. He reproduces, you know, asexually. It's like, and he's a pregnant man alien and... It was in a time when people would frown on whatever kind of makeup roles you would do, or you'd be typecast. And so cool how he had enough star power. He could do basically whatever he wanted.
And you forget it's him.
Yeah. You can tell in his quite, I forget after a while. I was like, that is freaking.
That was Louis Gossett Jr., you know.
Louis Gossett.
But then you got to think, too, he did Jaws 3, the worst of the Jaws movies.
Oh, totally. Well, I mean, Jaws 4 is pretty bad, but yeah, Jaws 3.
I've got a soft spot for Jaws 4. I'm sorry. I like Jaws 4 because it kind of brought things back. But, you know, the ending is always kind of like a shark does not roar, you know.
He's like one of the few highlights of Jaws 3. I saw it again recently when we were doing our Shark Week special.
It's just so bad. It was done in, I remember they did it in 3D, and I remember my mom and my dad taking me to see it, and my father was like, you know, Jaws 2, okay, yeah, I'm fine with that.
Right.
Jaws 3, it's like, you can see how they did the photography, you know.
It's just been forever ruined, just it's, whatever it was, just refuses to update it.
And, you know, he plays kind of like the Murray Hamilton role in that, you know, like where Murray Hamilton was the mayor, Louis Gossett Jr. has to keep the park running no matter what.
Also,
you know,
with Dennis Quaid, but he was high on cocaine. So
him and Dennis Quaid were in that movie together. I forget.
Yeah.
It's him, Dennis Quaid, Bess Armstrong. There's a name. Well, there's a name you don't throw out often. I don't think who else was in that.
Leah Thompson,
yeah.
The one guy from like Kroll, I think, was in it too. I think.
No.
Oh, this other guy I'm thinking of.
Yeah, it wasn't Ken Marshall. I know that.
Ah, okay.
But I always crack up at that because, like, you know, he was trying, they were, if you remember, they were filming that, and that happened as they were filming it right about the time the whole Vic Morrow thing happened.
Yes, yeah. And.
They were like trying to tell them because there's a scene where the shark crashes right into the control room and all that water comes through.
Mm-hmm.
But they had to tell the actors, okay, the water's going to come through, but you're going to be harnessed and all this electrical equipment's going to go off and stuff like that. So they had to be careful with that. I remember that very clearly as they were showing making of. And Gossett was very vocal. He's like, look, I don't want anything happening during this.
You know?
And director kind of was like, okay, we'll pull this back, we'll do this, you know, you guys will be pushed one way and then we'll have it go this way and then we'll cut this, you know it's not, you know, we'll just have the internal, you know, squibs go off and all that stuff. So he was pretty vocal on that, but I liked him in, you ever seen the movie he did with Chuck Norris called Firewalker?
Was fun for Cannon Films because basically he's always very comfortable in his element. And I think this is it. Like, the award credentials gave him extra attention, but yet then he does like all these great miniseries, like one where he's like playing a actual like African leader of a militia. And But yeah, when he got to freaking Firewalkers, like, he was doing all kinds of fun kind of adventure movies, and he really is just kind of a natural badass. Like, you just legit buy him. And that's where he formed a lot of fun friendships with actors of all kinds. Like, he talks to a lot of the same people. You never hear anything about him refusing to say a certain line or
anything. No. That was the last movie Will Sampson ever did.
Oh.
Because if you watch the movie, Will Sampson was sick.
I can buy that.
He was. My father's like, Will Sampson looks like terrible. And I'm like, yeah. So then we find out later he had like heart problems or something like that. But the movie everybody forgets he did was, he was the first guy to do Anwar Sadat.
Yes. And
he did that with T. I don't think anyone could play Sadat.
Totally. Because
you got John Rhys Davies playing Nasser.
I think that's the one I'm thinking of. Yeah, where he's like the giant military leader. It was a giant like 2-4-part event series, and it was much like the Inspector's movies. It was just cool to see how he was just one of the few guys who could kind of be in and out and do any kind of giant TV event. And I don't know if it's so much his voice as it is just kind of his facial reactions. He's just very good at just kind of conveying kind of what's on his mind, and often he's given characters who get to say, I mean, off-color jokes, or as opposed to, I'm going to give you a wisdom of advice, or just, you know, be very intense. He just has some kind of essence to him.
Digstown, when he did Digstown.
Digstown was wild, and he did like another movie with James Wood afterwards. The River Niger is a fun take on that play. He's the Reverend in J.D.'s Revenge, that blaxploitation film.
Oh, I forgot he was in that. Oh. I watched that one night. I somebody loaned me the DVD of that. And I was like, wait a minute. I was like, wait a minute. But then I was like, okay, it was the 70s, you know, blaxploitation horror.
Right.
Do you remember him being on the Partridge Family?
Partridge Family, The Rookies, Love American Style, and even a Bonanza episode is like,
yeah.
Yeah, you might remember his appearance on McCloud, and even he's just done so many other ones. But when you see him, you're just like, yeah, that was one slam bang, you know, guest spot to be proud of. Because,
and it's him and Richard Pryor playing black villains, and the Partridge Family is contacted to play at their party. And you got to think, it's like, you know, it's like, it's Richard Pryor and Louis Gossett Jr. and, you know, you got Danny Bonaducci, you know, hanging out with them and stuff. And it's like, okay, you know, the paycheck, you know, it's the Partridge Family. It's the hottest show on TV. You're going to be on it. And Pryor, I think, really hits it big as a comedian, too.
Totally. I take it you also saw The Young Rebels back in the day, which was basically set during the Revolutionary War.
No, I never got a chance to see that.
It seems like it is one of the most talked about shows, and it's still been denied a DVD release. But, I mean, I think that's just the fun of these kinds of actors, is you get to kind of casually look for their resume and say, you know, I'll get to that someday. Because I'm a fan of their acting, and they never play the exact same character. I mean, he's in 2 hard-boiled cop movies, The Choir Boys and freaking... The Laughing Policeman with Walter Matthau.
Both. Oh, The Laughing Policeman was unbelievable. But The Choir Boys I saw when I was a kid.
Oh, that's got to be scary.
Dad, my father had it on. It was on channel. That was Joseph Wambaugh, right? It was Joseph Wambaugh?
Joseph Wambaugh, yeah. They had adapted his material, and Robert Aldridge was directing, and... all kinds of character actors are in this damn thing.
Perry King's in that, right?
Mm-hmm. Charles Durning. And
I remember they catch Perry King. They do a raid on an S&M parlor, and Perry King gets caught in the S&M parlor.
Yes.
And he shoots himself in the end. I remember he kills himself for some reason. But I remember that movie very well, because my father was like, Uncle Joe said this was like when he was a cop,
mm-hmm.
the choir boys. He was like, you know, he said, but that movie left a big impression on me, you know, how they just take shit into their own hands, you know.
Oh, totally. How anyone can be acting inappropriately and they have to arrest one of their own. He's like, hey, man, you should have left 20 minutes ago before we got here.
You know? You should be out of the chains by now, you know.
right? At least don't have your dick wet. Please don't. Just figure it out here.
I love it. I think Durning opens the door up and he just sees Perry King like tied up and getting whipped. And he's like, what the hell's going on here?
Yeah.
Very well. They all meet in the park for some reason.
Oh, right. It's like the only play you would think that it almost makes you wonder throughout that movie if it's like a New York or Chicago type city. And it's like, I wonder if less crimes are happening that night just because they see some cops are in the park.
Yeah.
Having a private chat.
There's 10 guys in the park. They're all cops. They all have a van. And you're like, what the hell's going on here? You know, but that movie was disturbing. I mean,
it really is. It's a dark comedy, but it is very much a Serpico predecessor where it's just like, yeah, it's like, here's what not to do. And here's how not to be a cop. And it's almost like a Natural Born Killer's Pain and Gain of its day where it's an anti-movie, which, well, it's hard to watch. But
that's funny, because Aldrich is like a really well, that's like one of the last movies I think Robert Aldrich did.
Yeah.
Before he passed away, because he did another one called Super Cop, which was like a black cop who basically takes on a drug cartel.
Oh, Jesus.
Oh, yeah. No. Aldrich did he kind of fell from grace with Hollywood for, you know, towards the end. Because he did, I think he did, I got to look it up later. When you get back on, with the situation with Facebook right now, I got to post on what Robert Aldrich did as a director. Because I know towards the end he was doing he wasn't as in demand as some directors were, you know.
Yeah.
Because he'd been kind of thrown out, because all the young guys were coming in, like the Peckinpahs and all those guys, mm-hmm. you know. And Aldrich was known as a great Western director. But, you know, Peckinpah did The Wild Bunch, and Robert Aldrich was just like, okay, I'm done, you know. But, yeah, The Choir Boys is a really rough movie to watch, you know.
It is. I still recommend it, though, because, I mean, aside from just the bizarreness of it and how you can actually kind of buy into it being something that happens. I mean, it's definitely a good use of all the talents because you're just seeing them having to portray these very tricky roles. And
I want to see who's in that because I want to see who's in that, the choir boys.
There's a bunch of other guys who's like, you might not know their name, but you've seen their faces in like a dozen different movies playing ambassadors or police sergeants. And even when Gossett has, you know, for the last dozen years, kind of just been in a bunch of made-for-TV or Christian movies or indie sleeper films that win all the festival awards, I think, and for a while there, he looked like he must have been steroid up a bit, and I want to say this very sensitively as I can, but there were some movies where he just really, you know, the performance is there and just a very giving actor, but it looked like, you know, it wasn't necessarily that he was showing his age so much as just probably they gave him the worst possible makeup or something like that.
Well, I found out that he had prostate cancer in 2010.
That makes sense.
And then he was hospitalized with COVID in 2020. But I think he may still be working.
Oh, he absolutely is. He's guest starred on everything. The Good Wife, Hawaii 5-0, and even freaking, what was it? I just saw him on. He was on an episode of The Book of Negroes, like real briefly. And he just got, I think, some acclaim for this one festival movie that is still on Showtime called The Cuban, where he plays
a musician.
Yep.
Yeah.
And that was one of those, you know, it's kind of a like it or hate it, but totally worth it for just how he decided, I'm going to make an art house movie that's just kind of a contemporary in a way. It's
kind of he's got the right now that he's, and I don't mean to say this sound rude, when he's older you pick and choose, you know. Yeah. I forget he was in Toy Soldiers.
That he's in this other Dolph Lundgren conspiracy movie called Cover Up, but yeah. That's just the fun of it all. You can see him in anything, whether it's an acclaimed all black drama like The Under Shepherd, or a guest spot on ER, or again just a piece of shit like Solar Attack or Left Behind Free. It doesn't.
he's like, fuck it. I'll just do what I want.
I'll play the president in a crappy religious movie. Copy. I got it. And then he eases it out with doing other important movies. Like he plays one of the deputies in Jasper, Texas, which is a real life true crime movie. And
yeah, I didn't know he had so many. I knew he was on the Rockford Files. I do remember that.
Yeah, like different times, like three different people.
And he was in Roots, and I remember he played Fiddler in that. But I'm trying to think, what was the one that he did? He did the Satchel Paige story, Don't Look Back.
Yes.
And then he does Sadat, The Guardian, A Gathering of Old Men, Roots, The Gift.
Yep.
Then I was kept thinking, what else did he do?
And you might have seen him in this South African prison film where he plays a political prisoner called Inside. And so that's just okay. It. He does a lot of these movies for Hallmark or Showtime, which, you know, they vary in quality and everything, but he's just always on point. He's been in other bizarre guest spots for like Return to Lonesome Dove and even Picket Fences, but I remember those. But kind of after Digstown and even Captain Planet, where he played Commander Clash, he kind of just picked it up just by kind of being featured cameos. But I just like how he wasn't just the go-to guy because they couldn't afford Morgan Freeman or Denzel Washington. Like, they legit just wanted a great actor.
Well, here's the thing that cracks me up is that he was on Family Guy as Sergeant Angry Man. Right. And I remember watching that episode and I'm like, oh my God, it's Louis Gossett Jr. And I think Seth MacFarlane was just like, hey, you know what? We're going to take the piss out of Officer and Gentleman. We want you to be like this DI that basically is like just so demeaning. And it's just like, he's like, oh yeah, sure, just give me the lines, you know, no problem. I guarantee he must have been reading the lines as he's doing the voiceover work, getting into it, and then they say okay, cut, and he would just start laughing.
I have no doubt, because Seth MacFarlane is always one of those, you just get it and then you're like, oh, I feel stupid for now, I got it.
Yeah, but I didn't know he was in it's kind of strange when he was doing, it's kind of weird because like you watch, he was in Hawaii Five-0, the new one.
Yes.
And then I'm trying to look back and I'm trying to think, was he in the original Hawaii Five-0?
I wouldn't doubt it. He could be like Robert Lojo. He's on both versions. And
yeah, he's like, wait, I was here, but now I'm here. And
I'm not seeing it, but I still got to give him praise for being in The Invader and even something tricky like Skin Game.
Oh, yeah. I remember when that came out. Whoa.
Oh, hard to watch, but interesting. And I do applaud him for being in the Roots Christmas special, The Gift.
Yeah.
Which is also fun because it's also kind of a future who's who of Starfleet Command, both Avery Brooks and Kate McGrew.
Oh, yeah. God.
You might have seen the HBO comedy TV Western he did of El Diablo with Anthony Edwards, which was kind of
wacky. No, I never saw that.
It's on HBO Max if you want to watch it now. But
okay.
So that's pretty much it. Just once the 90s approached, he was just Mr. TV Movie of the Week. And sometimes they were really cool, like Father and Son. He plays a father trying to get his ex-con son, Blair Underwood, just back into rehab and absolutely fails. And just the aura. It's the score for that kind of made the movie. It was by Mark Snow of the X-Files. But Gossett just brings it up to an extra notch, you know, for what could have easily been a throwaway, decent, or schlocky role. And he just amps it up to like 1,000. It's like, you will not go back to the cell. It's like, fucking A, good Lewis, get it.
I hate doing that again.
Blair Underwood. Yeah, Blair is a good actor, but he was still kind of in L.A. Law mode at that moment where he's learning from the greats, and he's like, okay, Gossett, what's my motivation?
What's my motivation? Do I put my foot up your ass?
Yeah, do I put my foot up your ass, or do I get into Radon Chong's panties? What do I do? What do I do here?
Well, here's the thing that cracks me up is I'm looking at that thing, the Young Rebels that you're talking about.
Oh, yeah.
Harve Bennett was in the movie, was the producer of that.
Yeah. Future Star Trek producer, yeah.
And I'm looking up, like, I couldn't believe what Harve Bennett did back in those days, you know. But
he was kind of discount Irwin Allen, and I don't mean that to be taking a dig at him. He did some good work, but he was just kind of one of those, if one of those guys weren't coming up with a time tunnel or earthquake for TV kind of thing, that he was kind of just coming up with other stuff that other people had passed on that he could still get done on time. And
well, remember, he was, let's see, Irwin Allen stopped doing the TV shows in the early 70s. So he kind of took, you can thank him for doing the Gemini Man.
Right.
But Harve Bennett, you know, hey, Harve Bennett saved Star Trek. And yes, that's something NASA Junior should have done.
I really am surprised that he didn't show up at least once, as the closest they got was like someone like Bernie Casey or some of those other 70s actors who would play animals.
Or Rock Peters.
Yeah, Rock Peters playing Sisko's dad,
you loved watching him. You loved watching his work, you know.
There's even a few cool serial killer movies he's done, like Carolina Skeletons and Keeper of the City, that he adds kind of a racial element to. And he just kind of, instead of just playing the preachy bad guy, good or bad guy, he's always really good at just kind of being an authority figure who you just absolutely want to see just triumph.
Yeah.
And I mean, I even wonder how different, like In the Heat of the Night would have been had he been in either version. He could have easily done, he could have been Officer Tibbs for sure. You know,
could have gotten the Tibbs role, but he was too young.
Too young at the time. And
too green and behind the ears a little bit. Because they gave it to Poitier because Poitier was a name.
Oh, well, but, and don't get me wrong, both great actors. And yeah. And what's his name on the show was also Dynamite. He was from A Soldier's Story.
Howard Rollins, yeah.
Howard Rollins Jr., yeah. I mean, and you know what? That would be a cool recreation. If they did an updated version somehow, I know they keep talking about they're doing a live version of A Few Good Men for TV and making some changes. And what if they did a live version of A Soldier's Story and they had like Louis Gossett in there?
As Adolf Caesar's character.
Something.
I can't see him doing that.
Not. I think he wants also just fun, kind of positive roles nowadays, like playing granddads or, again, you know, got to play someone who works for the Pentagon at least. You know?
But his voice is so recognizable.
Yeah, and I'm actually surprised he didn't do even more cartoons and video games. Cause I mean, you mentioned before we started the Batman from 2005 where he played Lucius Fox,
I thought it was great for him to have because he's taking that character from Morgan Freeman.
That
little fraternity, you know, Morgan, him, you know, all those guys that were,
could have easily played it live action, done a good job at the time. But I'm sure people who play video games might know him from Half-Life 2. So
yeah.
That's a creepy voice that he did for that one. So it is cool to just kind of see how he experimented with a bit. And when he did a dud, it was hardly one that he couldn't do a good job in, or that, you know, just something outrageous. Like you're not going to see something like Sharknado, you know, 7,000 on his resume. He didn't fall from grace that far.
Even he has his limits on what he wants.
Yeah, I'm sure he had a decent enough agent where he's like, okay, so you're hot shit for a minute. He's pretty much in the roster of actors, kind of like Marley Matlin and all these other people. He's like one-time Oscar winner, you know, and now just kind of doing TV the rest of your life because it's like, we've had you be a military guy in a bunch of other dumb blockbusters, but now let's get you back to some considerate stuff based on plays or
selling books. And I loved him in was an Iron Eagle.
Yeah, he owned it.
The thing I couldn't stand was they brought Jason, whatchamacallit, back.
Oh yeah.
He died in the second one. What's he doing in the third one?
I thought it was the fourth one, but I could be wrong.
Yeah. Then we find out Doug didn't die. You know, it's like, wait, what?
The third one was wild because basically now Gossett is carrying the movie. Now he's got new group of recruits to go from.
Well, it was Iron Eagle 2.
Yeah.
Iron Aces.
Fun movies if you can get past the jingoistic, you know, aspects.
If you can get past the crap that's being thrown at you, you know.
Or Rambo Reagan crowd.
let's see. Iron Eagle is 85, 86.
Something like that.
Yeah, because Queen comes out with One Vision in that movie. And then they have Iron Eagle 2 in 88, right?
Mm-hmm.
Iron Eagle 3 is Aces.
Yep, 92, and they changed. I think that's where it changed hands. Like, those were like independent Sony movies, and that was a New Line Cinema one.
Yeah, but John Glenn directed. I didn't know that. The guy did
Out for Justice and Lock Up.
Yeah, and it was supposed to, and the originals were done by Sidney J. Fury.
Yeah, and what's weird is this one is like it played in theaters briefly and I constantly saw it advertised on many home video trailers. Like it just kind of, it did better there. And I even recall some people gave it kind of the highest reviews out of it. It's just most critics were kind of already done with it because they just couldn't not look at it as a Top Gun Rambo knockoff.
No, but I thought it was a really fun movie to watch. But what gets me is like they do like an alternate, the fourth one.
Yeah. Just like he never died. And you're like, what? No.
Yeah, and they strain it so as a missile lock shooting down, Doug ejects safely. Okay, so what we find out is that he's not dead in the fourth one. And I'm kind of like, well, why the hell is he not dead, you know?
Yeah, and when you basically lie to your audience and just say, yeah, guess what, you thought wrong, despite what you saw, it's just not good screenwriting, no matter the genre. And he looks confused just as much in that one as he does in Jaws Free, where Jaws Free, you know what he's going for, but he's not sure if it's making any difference, you know, with what is on screen. But yeah, with that one, he's just like, hey, time to hang it up. I don't have to do anything except just look intense.
But the thing that cracks me up, Iron Eagle 3, is that Sonny Chiba is in that movie too.
Sonny Chiba?
Wow. Yeah.
All people.
Yeah. Sonny Chiba, man. I can't say anything bad about him. He was a great, great actor.
Mm-hmm.
Street Fighter, son of sister of Street Fighter, you know. So.
Totally.
But yeah, that's what happened. You know, I was like looking at it. I was like, but yeah, it was Iron Eagle was kind of like, you know, the it wasn't Rambo, like you said, it wasn't Rambo, it wasn't
that's just it. When you have elements of other movies that are coming out, people just want to just pretty much destroy your movie.
Yeah, but the great thing about this is it was fighter pilots, and nobody, you know, it wasn't Top Gun. Top Gun to me was just, you know. You know, Tom Cruise smiling, looking good,
hitting romance.
Yeah, yeah. You know, with Kelly McGillis and his, you know the whole theory that, you know, what was it? Quentin Tarantino said it's the ultimate gay movie.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so what happens is that, like, you watch Iron Eagle, we're like, okay, it's a kid. His dad gets captured in the Middle East by some, like, you know, Banana Republic dictator. Him and his father's buddy.
And Perrette, of all people, is playing the bad guy.
Yeah, yeah. And you're like Perrault. Wait. The guy who played Hercule Poirot is playing the movie. Is in the movie? Yeah.
He's a British guy. He looks like he could be anything, but he is not Middle Eastern.
Yeah. He looks like he could be from you know.
Tim Thomerson, but, Jack Death himself from Transfers is also in there.
Yeah. I think, as one also, of the guys. Robbie Wrist is in that. Robbie Wrist and I keep thinking Lamar from Revenge of the Nerds is in that. Michael B. Scott.
I mean, might as well.
Might as well put him in, you know. But the funny thing is, like, you know, I love the part where he's flying the plane and he puts the plane on the back of the pickup truck. You know, it's like, you know, it's just, oh, come on, man. You know? But, yeah, you know, he's had a great career, Louis Gossett Jr. You know, it's nothing to sneeze at. You know, he's won an Oscar.
Compared to most.
He won an Emmy.
Even when he does some of these faith movies, it's hardly anything where you're just like, oh, boy. You know, it's just.
Yeah.
It's like, did him here and there, and then would follow it up with a pretty compelling mystery or an award-winning drama. And it's just like, yeah. That's fine. It's okay to be the Emmy guy in addition to the award guy. So he's just one of the many character actors who basically embraced any format before it became cool to be a movie star who's now doing TV, you know?
Yeah. That's the good thing. You know, he's gone from the big screen to the small screen to the big screen to the small screen. He has both toes in the water, so to speak.
Yes.
Yeah.
If Robert Forster can do it, doing exploitation movies and then award-winning, you know, TV shows and, you know,
yeah,
anything is possible. And I'm just glad that he's one of the many.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't think you'll see Louis Gossett Jr. work with Tarantino, though, but...
It's okay.
It's okay. It's okay.
He's worked with all kinds of people.
Yeah.
We'll return after these messages.
Do you ever find yourself thinking about who would win in a fight between Goku and Superman? Hi, I'm James Gavsy, and on the Who Would Win show, me and my co-host Ray ignore anything important happening in the outside world and debate fictional battles between characters from comics, movies, and video games.
We got a new show every week, and almost always am I the winner.
Yeah, not true, Ray.
In the past, we've discussed such matches as Captain America versus Darth Vader, Solid Snake versus the Iron Giant, classic matchups like RoboCop versus Terminator, and even the Muppets versus Sesame Street.
That one was crazy. So if you're a fan of geek culture and love a spirited debate, check out the Who Would Win show wherever you get your podcasts, or check us out at whowouldwinshow.com.
We let things pile up in the DVR. We add them to our queues. We wait for the DVDs and Blu-rays. We time shift. The Time Shifters Podcast. Sci-fi, horror, fantasy, superheroes, comedy, action, film, television, maybe some not-so-current events. Find us on iTunes or at timeshifterspodcast.com.
Cool thing about Blind Knowledge is we are in multiple countries. We are worldwide, all across the globe. We are in the U.S. We are in the U.K. We are in Canada, Germany, India, Japan. We're in Australia, y'all. BlindKnowledge.com. Now back to the feature presentation.
Dragon Ball Z, One Piece, Naruto, all things that we love, all manga that were originally published in the legendary magazine Weekly Shonen Jump.
But not every series can run for 300 chapters and have a hit anime. This is David.
This is Jordan.
We're the hosts of Shonen Flop. Each episode we look at manga that ran in Jump that didn't quite make it.
We discuss what it did wrong, what it did right, how the series could have turned itself around, and ultimately, was it a flop or not?
Run all your favorite podcast apps, and you can find us at shonenflop.com.
Keep on flopping, floppers.
Follow us on the web on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. The podcast is available on Podbean, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Anchor, Apple, and anywhere else podcasts are available. Feel free to review our show and leave comments on any of those sites. Thanks a million for listening. It's a jacked up.